Sarah Pretzky knows mystery writing. She's the author of 17 New York Times best-selling V.I. Warshawski novels, the latest of which, Brushback, was released this week. The Chicago-based author talked with me about her character, this newest book, and how the genre has changed over the past 30 years. I remember when you were on Talk of the Nation a few years ago, you talked about how you tend to start with the idea of a crime. Is that how your newest book, Brushback, started?
Brushback is unique among my 17 V.I. Warshawski novels in that I started with a location. I had been talking to a guy who led tours underneath Wrigley Field, and he was telling me how disgusting it is underneath the stands and their tunnels underneath the field. And he said when the building went up in the 1920s, it just wasn't designed for the long term and certainly not for modern technology, and the plumbing is pretty revolting. And I thought, what a place for a chase scene in a detective novel. And so then I built my story around creating a chase scene in Wrigley Field.
Wonderful. That kind of ties to how much of both Chicago and Illinois are in your books. And that's one of the things I really love about them is that it's actually a character. It's not just set in Chicago in name only.
I came to Chicago doing community service work in the 1960s at the kind of height of racial tensions in the city. And I worked with kids age 6 to 11. And it's just such an intense time. The city really got into my blood. It's the place that I came of age. And even though there was a lot of violence and a lot of negative stuff, it was also a time of enormous hope for really big change. And so it's a place that I feel wedded to in a passionate way. And I think that's why it plays such a big role in the story.
Your main character, V.I. Warshawski, or Vic to her friends, who, for those not familiar, is a no-nonsense, very independent private detective. Does the way you came to Chicago explain she has a real social and political conscience?
I think that the time that I came of age during the civil rights movement and second wave feminism and the anti-war movement, it kind of shaped who I am, and so it also shaped the way that I think about V.I. Warshawski. She's also a reflection of my own personal experience. I was entering the business world, management, at a time when there weren't a lot of women doing that kind of work. And V.I., she came to me. I'd been thinking for quite a few years that I wanted to write about a woman private investigator and didn't have confidence in myself as a writer, didn't have a real idea for a good character. And then I was in a meeting. I was one of these women who we had great men who we worked for who mentored us, and we had a handful of pills who just hated women encroaching on their turf and threw as many rocks in our path as they could. And I was working for one of those guys, and I was in a meeting, and my lips were saying, gosh, you know, heck of an idea, and the balloon over my head was saying, you unspeakable, unprintable turkey, blah, blah, blah. And literally at that moment, I thought, that's my detective. She is doing a job like me that didn't exist when she was going to school, but she says what's in the balloon over her head because she didn't grow up being told to be a good girl and she doesn't worry about getting fired. So she kind of reflects my own experience. She's like me, only better.
So she's, to use a cliche word, a trailblazer, and you found an organization, Sisters in Crime, to help other female mystery writers. Is fighting that glass ceiling something that's particularly important to you?
I think that it's hard for me to answer that question in a way because I can't really explain what drives me except that my father's family were immigrants from Eastern Europe. I wouldn't be alive if they hadn't been able to get here in advance of the Holocaust in Eastern Europe, and everyone in my family who wasn't able to get a visa or get here was murdered. And so I think it matters to me down in my bones, so to speak, that everyone have a shot at a better life than they may be getting. And so that, in a way, drives my fiction. I hope that doesn't make it sound boring. It's just the passion that drives me.
Well, it's definitely far from boring. You're currently the president of the Mystery Writers Association of America, and you've been writing within your genre for over 30 years. How have you seen it change over time?
When I started, one of my favorite rejection letters when I was sending, or my agent was sending out my first book, was an editor who said that a book set in Chicago had regional interest only and not enough people read in the Midwest to make it profitable to publish a book set here. So in some ways, I think we've seen New York's eyes open and realize that, yeah, people read in the Midwest, and they read in the South. And so regional books, I mean, books set outside New York, L.A., and San Francisco, they're much more acceptable now. You're seeing a lot more diversity in the kinds of characters and the kinds of writers who are doing crime fiction. At the same time, publishing is kind of in free fall these days. There's been a huge set of mergers. When I started, there were about 40 publishers. There are 5 now, big ones. And about 10,000 people in the industry have lost their jobs, and so it's a lot harder for new writers and mid-list writers to get attention. A lot of careers are disintegrating. So Mystery Writers is really trying to take a leadership position and help both writers and publishers develop better ways of getting books to readers and making readers aware of really great books that may just not be on their radar.
Mm-hmm. You've been really working to try and increase the diversity as part of your presidency, as you talked about.
The Mystery Writers has an incredibly hardworking board. Donna Andrews, who's our executive vice president, Claire O'Donohue here in Chicago, Greg Heron in Louisiana, really working hard on coming up with some ways to raise the profile for writers of color and for LGBT writers.
What kind of response have you gotten so far from your work, both
yours? I think that the response we're getting from the publishing world is the same response that we got when I started Sisters in Crime, and that is, gosh, you know, we just haven't been thinking about it. And publishing, you know, everybody wants to see more readers, more people connecting with books, and so there's a lot of interest. There's no hostility. It's more a question of finding the time to do the job and the right strategies for making it happen.
So going back to VI, you've done something that some writers choose not to do. You've let VI age with your books. How has that process gone?
I have to confess that I've started waffling. When I started the series, I wanted her to age in real time because who she is was shaped by the events of the 50s and 60s, and some of it was the loss of the steel mills, which is the part of Chicago that she grew up around, and some of it was her mother came here as a refugee from Mussolini's Italy and the race laws there. And when I started, I was 30, 31, and looked at my mother and I thought, you're only groaning because you're just not taking care of yourself. And that kind of thought has come back to bite me in such a big way. It's like, oh, this is what happens to your body as you get older. Not fun. So I've started holding back on VI's aging. She's 50 now. She's aged 20 years in the last 33 years. I want her to continue to have a really vital physical presence, both on the street and to blend in the bedroom. I don't want her having to slow down because her back is bad or her knees need replacing. And so I haven't figured out how to age her or if I will age her. I hate to step away from that issue, but the other part of it is that the people around her, they're the ones whose lives I can control. I can't control what's happening to the people that I know and love who become ill or develop dementia, and ultimately that I lose them. But I can control how the people in my book age, and so they've stopped aging. I know that's chickening out. I know a braver, bolder person would have Mr. Contreras develop Alzheimer's disease and Lottie depressed because she had to quit the practice of medicine, but I'm not ready to put them through those difficult scenarios right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we may all want just more VI, which I understand comes some from your fourth grade teacher who encouraged you to write.
Yes, that's very true. Patty Shepherd, who I adored, and she was a great teacher, I think, for everyone in her classroom. She thought all of us had special gifts, and she thought mine was writing, and She encouraged me to write stories. She, even during the summer after I was in the fourth grade, encouraged me to actually come and read them to her, which can't imagine anything more boring than a nine-year-old reading stories to you. And my mother thought the same when she found out about it. She put a stop to it. But she was a huge presence in my keeping my writing voice growing.
What does make you write?
I am a person who loves stories. I love to write. I love to play with words and language. I have some writer friends who say, I couldn't live without writing. I have to write. I don't think of it that way. I can't live without stories. And so I want to read them and I want to tell them.
Mm-hmm. So then what kind of story can we expect from you next?
Going back into the kind of Cold War past of biological warfare, there's a story I've been itching to tell for a long time, and I'm trying to figure out right now how to bring it to life on the page.
And I'm interested, you're on book tour now, and you know, you meet all sorts of fans. Is there maybe one particular experience that still really stands out to you?
I have to say that I did an event here in Chicago with one of the books in the series where VI has gone back to South Chicago, back to the part of the city where the steel mills stood. And a group of about 10 women stayed on after the event was over. It was at a library. And they told me they had not read a book since they'd graduated from high school. They told me they were married to men who were unemployed now that the mills had closed. They said somebody told them that there was a book set in their neighborhood and they read it. And they said VI gave them courage to face this very difficult hand that life had dealt them. They were working two jobs. Some of them were working three jobs. And when I think of those women, they stayed. They bought my book. They bought it in hardcover. They wouldn't let me give them copies. They were very proud of coming and being part of the event. And I feel like I owe them my best work always.
Yeah, wow. That must have been wonderful to meet them.
It's incredibly moving, and you think, what did I do to deserve this? And these women are heroic, and I think of them every time I write and want to cut corners, and I think, no, you do this the right way for those women.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Oh, thank you for your interest. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Keep them honest down in Springfield.
We'll do our best. That's Sarah Paretsky, the Chicago-based New York Times bestselling author of the Illinois Mystery Series centering on private detective V.I. Warshawski. I'm Amanda Hunnigfort. Thank you for listening.